Okay. Let me just try this out. Let's see if this one goes anywhere. But as we age, we're aging. Those distant memories, they get further and further and further. And as we recall them, we try to recall those old memories. We tell stories. We regale everyone with the stories of our past. Some of the details, I don't know. They might not be as accurate. Not even intentionally embellishing anything. Not even trying to exaggerate or make a story sound more interesting. But there are times where you look back in your life and you go, did that really happen like that? Because I remember that, and that sounds kind of crazy now, but I think it went down like that. I think that's what happened. And over time, maybe there's going to be an extra detail here, extra detail there. I was at the ballpark in 88 when he went 4-for-4 with 4 home runs. And you're like, I don't know, should we fact check the guy? No, let him have the memory. I was there when Ollie knocked him out in the first round and I felt the sweat across my face. I was sitting first row, you know, and no one's going to check you on that sports story. Your early romance stories, huh? You're telling stories with the fellas about your first time. It probably was awful, but you don't tell it that way. No, you got to romanticize the story a little bit. A bunch of your stories are a bunch of bullshit by now, right? I hope not. I mean, I hope you can still cling to some accuracy. But a bunch of your stories are a bunch of bullshit by now, right? It doesn't matter. Keep telling them. That's why I had this moment today. I don't know why I had this moment today. But the first time I went to the Comedy Store in La Jolla, down in San Diego, I used to just take a chance. It wasn't even a comic I've heard of. His name was Barry Diamond on the marquee, the big ivy wall in La Jolla on the marquee, Barry Diamond. And I remember calling on my landline. I called the box office and I said, is he funny? And they were so pissed at my question. The guy that answered, he's like, what do you mean, is he funny? Yes, he's a comedian. Yes, he has a show tonight at 8. Either you come or you don't come. And I was like, whoa. I had major attitude coming my way from the guy who answers the phone at the Comedy Store in La Jolla. What year was this? My God. I'll say 2002. Why not? The first time I ever went, I had to call ahead. Hey, is this guy funny? Because I don't have that much money and I'm hoping to watch a good show tonight. He's like, yes, of course, you idiot. He's been on TV. He's been on Letterman. He's been on the HBO Young Comedian Special. He's been on, you know, they always do the credits before the headliner comes on. Credits are changing, by the way, nowadays. No one cares if you've been on Fallon or Kimmel. That's barely an audience. I don't know anyone who's watching Fallon or Kimmel anymore. I think we know the big audience is to be on Rogan. For a comedian to get on Rogan, all of a sudden you're famous. That's what they told me when I interviewed a KMBR many years ago. The program director said, if you get on the air with us, you're immediately a name in the Bay Area. I thought that was a big deal. That was like a big comment. If you get on the air with us, I didn't, by the way. But at least I got that interview. That felt nice. He says, you become such a big name immediately. You know, KMBR, I don't think that's the case anymore. But at the time, it felt real. It felt like the vehicle that SNL must feel like if you're in improv comedy and you're like, if I could just get on SNL, then I'm a name. And it's kind of true. But what am I talking about? Oh, yeah. So the credits. You've seen him on this. You've seen him on that. You've seen him on this. You've seen him on that. About a big round of applause for Barry Diamond. And I go to the show. I forget who I was with, and I'm sitting in the front row, and this guy's killing. He was great. But here's where I go, did that really happen with my memory? Halfway through his show, he goes, I'm just going to sing some songs. And he wasn't kidding. He just stopped the show, and he started singing Walking in Memphis. Now, at this time of my life, I've never heard the song Walking in Memphis. So I figured, is this his original song? He did it so well. You ever watch, like, I don't know, American Idol or anything? What's the one where they turn their chairs around? I've never seen it, The Voice. I think that's Christina Aguilera. I should probably watch an episode of The Voice if it's still on, because I kind of like shows like that, but I never really find time to watch them, because all I'm watching lately is sports, and baseball season is here, and the NBA's heating up, and we still have March Madness. Okay, so Barry Diamond, he's like this older, big dude. He looks like a linebacker. He's probably been on plenty of stages his whole life, just like, you know, a lifer on the road type of comic. He knows he kills. He has the jokes that work in every city. He was one of those comics where you're just like, this is perfect comedy. It's going to work in any city. These jokes always hit. They hit, they hit, they hit, one after the other after the other. And then you could just tell by this point of his career, he's probably in his late 50s, maybe in his 60s by then. Actually, I don't know. I can't gauge age. Hey, he's rhyming a lot tonight. But he says, I'm just going to sing. And it wasn't comedy anymore. This guy just turned the comedy show into a concert. And the whole crowd was kind of quiet, because that doesn't ever happen at a comedy show, where they just say, all right, let's slow things down a little bit. And he starts singing Walking in Memphis. And it was so good. I remember almost feeling emotional. You ever at a concert and the song's so good that you kind of feel some feelings? And it was such a detour from laughs. And I was like, what kind of phase of life is this guy in? Where he's like, you know what? I command the attention of you, the sheep in the crowd. So follow me on this journey. And then he went back to comedy and he finished strong. But I was thinking about that because for some reason I heard the song Walking in Memphis today. And I'm going to play it. I'm just going to play a little bit of it. And I want you to know that Barry Diamond brought that shit home in 2002 at the La Jolla Comedy Store. Come on, Barry. Get that piano. With my feet 10 feet off a beam. Beam? Walking in Memphis. Yeah. But do I really feel the way I feel? It's heating up. It's heating up. Saw the ghost of Elvis on Union Avenue. That sounds scary as shit. To the gates of Graceland. And I watched him walk right through. Woo! Now security, they did not see him. They just hovered around his tomb. Really? There's a pretty little thing waiting for the king down in the jungle room. When I was walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis. They've got catfish on the table. Who's they? They've got gospel in the air. Who's they? The whole city of Memphis has catfish and gospel? And River and Green be glad to see you. River of Green is glad to see you. Actually, that might be the shittiest song of all time. God, I don't know what Barry Diamond did to me that night, convincing me that Walking in Memphis is a hit. I mean, it heats up. I like that when a song kind of heats up and brings you somewhere. But what's he talking about? He went to tour Graceland and then they had catfish on the table and the security swarmed his tomb. I was about to say Barry, like he wrote the song, but who wrote it? Mark Cohn, C-O-H-N. Would you have guessed C-O-N-E if I didn't spell it? Have you heard of Mark Cohn? Oh, boy. Is this just going to be Walking in Memphis analysis? Because guess what, pal? I got some other podcasts I could be listening to. Okay. Stay with me. I had a dream. Not Martin Luther King style, but I had a real dream last night, and it was the scariest shit. I want to know if you could relate. This was probably the scariest dream I've ever had. Had a dream that an atomic bomb was coming down. I saw a simulation. You know, I was showing my students probably a month ago, a simulation, like National Geographic YouTube video of what it was like for the citizens of Hiroshima. Some of the survivors actually describing what it was like. The scariest sight to see this come from the sky. Now, the survivors, you know, that were little tiny kids. They were little kids in elementary school in Hiroshima. And now they're on this YouTube video I'm showing my class, and they're remembering what it was like to see their city turn to ash. But they're even claiming that they saw this light come down from the sky. And I'm just like, what? What? Could you imagine? It stayed with me. It stayed somewhere in the crease of my brain fold. And I saw the beginning of destruction. In my dream last night, I just saw the explosion. And someone was telling me, just there were strangers. No one in this dream was a recognizable face. I couldn't even tell what town I was in, but there were strangers saying, this is it, this is it, this is the atomic bomb, this is it, it's the A-bomb, like goodbye, like say goodbye. And I was like, okay, I'm dying, this is how I die. Have you had that dream? Has anyone had the dream that they're being bombed to their own death and they're seeing it? They're seeing it come out of the sky. So I have to Google this. It shook me. Like, I couldn't shake it in the morning, making breakfast for my daughters, drinking coffee, even teaching my first class. I still felt the residue of the atomic bomb dream where I'm like, I died in that dream, and it felt so damn vivid. And for some reason, it's staying with me. So I go to Google and I just look up dream interpretation. What's the symbol nuclear bomb mean? And it says, I might be feeling a loss of control, or it could serve as a warning of physical symptoms connected to the inability to recognize and process anger. Interesting. It could have said anything and I was going to take it to heart in that moment. You ever have those like vulnerable moments where you're like, I'll just hear anything right now and it'll probably hit home. So whatever website I found, Googling a bomb dream symbol, what does it mean? Loss of control. Okay. It's kind of all of us, right? What are we controlling? Or my body is sending signals that I'm trying to process some sort of anger, recognize anger. And when you hear anger, most people are told anger, bad, avoid it. Happy, good, go in that direction, avoid anger. I don't know. I think there's a lot to learn from anger. I think it's almost something that people hide. Like they don't want to reveal. I was angry yesterday. If someone ever says, how are you? Most people aren't like, well, I've been kind of angry lately. But everyone experiences it. I think there's some shame because we'd love to say, doing well, man. How are you? That's how we like to answer. How are you doing? I'm great, man. How's it going? If anyone just says, you know, how you doing? You're like full of anger, full of rage. You go, whoa, God. Well, good luck with that. It's not good, but how do you process it? Could be good. That's when you get some tools. How do you process it? If it's violence, it's not good. If it's being mean, if you're transferring the anger, it's not good. If you're journaling about it, learning about yourself, being introspective, aiming to be better, aiming to find some tools, some breath work, some fitness, good, good. If you're podcasting about it, even better. Welcome in, folks. It's episode 234. We're going to process some things. Let's process some things. It could be dream symbols. We could be talking about bombs. We could be talking about walking in Memphis, where they had catfish on the table. Who? The whole city of Memphis just had old, lukewarm catfish? You probably shouldn't eat that shit. But what about the people in these videos who remember wars, and now they're in just YouTube videos that teachers show their history classes? The survivors, the people that experienced it, the primary sources who lived to tell the story. Here's what it was like in Hiroshima. Are all of those memories, just like my memory of Barry Diamond, did he really stop his comedy show just to sing Walking in Memphis and then it like evoked big emotion out of the crowd that night? I think so. I think that was the story. Is there a chance it didn't exactly go that way? I guess, maybe. It's been about 22 years. Okay, it's been a long time. So when I do see some of these people, whether it's Hiroshima, whether it's some of these Vietnam videos, even Pearl Harbor, I am enthralled when I hear people tell the stories. But I also wonder if you could, I don't know, like take a friend's story and kind of go with some of those details. Doesn't that happen sometimes? Stolen valor? I don't know, it happens. I think some people who get caught up into a historic event, they start to take things that they heard or maybe they saw other people experience or maybe a relative or maybe a friend. And then after 30 years, it becomes your own. You mold it into your own. And that's when you wonder, people know they're lying up to a certain point. And then if you tell the story time and time again, OJ, but if you tell the story time and time again, does the human brain have the ability to believe bullshit? And I think it does. I think that's why a lot of stories you hear become tall tales. What percentage of people have told a lie in the last year? I'm going to guess 98. And it doesn't mean it's like a malicious lie. It doesn't mean like you're just such a deceptive, tricky person. But what percentage of people have told a lie of some sort in the last year? You know you have. If you're listening right now trying to be all pious, you're trying to be all pious on this podcast. Shit. Let's Google pious. I want to make sure I'm using that correctly. If not, that's embarrassing. Pious? No, that's not how you pronounce it. All right, pious. Strongly believing in religion and living in a way that shows this belief. Oh, God. Am I misusing it? Very religious, moral people. I don't know. Godly, devoted, spiritual. All right, but if you're pious, that means you're probably not lying. But no, a lot of religion is based in lying, right? And here's how it was thousands of years ago, and here's how they want us to still be today. There's a lot of religions predicated on a little lie here and a little lie there, but it's been told for so many years that it becomes our truth, our faith, our reality. So just go with it. Just ride the wave. What are you going to do? Rewrite human history? You can't rewrite it. You can't do it. I love studying human history, but I think it's okay to be skeptical. Am I becoming a conspiracy theorist? Did any of that really happen? Oh, that's dangerous. No, I mean, I believe most things. That's my whole life. I believe what teachers have taught me. I believe a lot of the stuff I read in books. Some people would say that's not a great quality. It's not quite gullible. It's just I don't have that type of cunning cynicism to just call bullshit on everything. I read the whole newspaper on Sunday. I read the whole newspaper and I don't look at the articles and go, I'm not sure about that. I just go, hey, it's a good report. It's a good article. Hey, it's a good editorial. I take things at face value, believe it or not, for the most part. Now, I'm a critical thinker in other ways, but when news or history is presented to me, whether it's a documentary, I watch it and I say, that's a good documentary. And then I might look it up and see, what do other people think? And they're watching it differently than me. Even history, like a lot of these things we learn about World War II. I learned Hitler was this way. I learned the Nazis were that way. And there's so many books still being written about Hitler, about the Nazis. There's so many modern historians who are bringing up more details about the people of Germany and Europe at that time. And it's so complex, and I start rethinking so many aspects. I mean, not the obvious stuff. It's obviously anti-Semitic, obviously a wildly sad time. But when you start learning about the details of how did it all come together, there's so many different stories of groupthink and indoctrination. And it's okay to be a little skeptical here and a skeptic there, I guess. One thing you do have to understand in history, at least this is a concrete opinion, this might even sound controversial, is that you gotta be, personally, I don't mean like a country ally, but you gotta be an ally to other groups that suffer. Otherwise, what are you living for? If you live at a level that's so selfish that it's truly just your existence and nothing else matters except for whatever's in your bubble, I don't know if that's a life worth living. I'll explain. So if you study Cesar Chavez, it was just Cesar Chavez Day, I think on Easter. I actually think I had a student tell me that, and I'm not fact checking, but I think Cesar Chavez Day just happened. So talking about the Mexican-American farm workers unionizing La Raza Unida, you talk about Cesar. And how those farm workers in the fields who had no wages, no rights, no voice, that they worked with the Filipino-American farm workers, and they staged one of the great strikes in 1965. The strike of, we're not going to pick the grapes anymore, and hey, everybody out there who go to the grocery stores, stop buying grapes. That was the basis of it. It took 5 years, this Delano grape strike. It's 5 years. That's wild. Usually I hear about a strike, you're like, how long did it last? A month? 2 months? Maybe 3 months? 5 years, the Delano grape strike. And what's the end result? They got a raise. These farm workers who are just treated like animals, less than animals. There are people that treat animals better than these farm workers, but they got a raise. They got a health plan. They got to unionize. They got some protection against the toxins. Yeah, I'm just teaching this, so I'm kind of fresh with it. I don't know if these are all the facts, but hey, it's what I heard, it's what I'm going with. But the idea of if the farm workers, if these Mexican farm workers, if these Filipino-American farm workers are asking other people, people like me, right now, don't buy grapes when you go grocery shopping. Just don't buy them. Don't support those companies. Those grape-growing companies that are becoming your wines, that are becoming your jams, just your table grapes that you enjoy. We have grapes in the fridge right now. They're so good, but they're not that good. I'm pretty sure in 1965, if I was around, I would have said no to grapes. I think I would have. That's me putting myself on a pedestal. Look at me. Aren't I wonderful? I think I would have said no to grapes. They're not asking white people to march in the streets. They're not asking you to just sign every petition every day or go to the council meetings. They're not asking you to go on hunger strikes. It's just, hey, could you guys not buy grapes at the store? Movements, and this was a successful movement. That's why there is a holiday for Caesar. It was a success. Okay. They opened up a lot of eyes. Hey, there's a lot of discrimination. This is the civil rights movement. And if they felt like we're underrepresented or we're an afterthought in the civil rights movement, what could we do to open up some eyes? All right. Big strikes, big marches, big protests, big boycotts, all the stuff that, you know, it's like the civil disobedience handbook. But it works. How does it work? People that aren't a part of that group have to care. Movements gain steam when people who are not a part of that group, those marginalized groups, they start caring. We have to. It's not, I don't even think it's like a choice. Should I care about other groups that are struggling and suffering? It has to be a yes. Otherwise, what the fuck are we doing? Otherwise, we're just an absolute failure of a race. What's that race? The human race. I'm just talking about collectively. The whole human race, it's a total failure if we're just living in our little boxes, caring about our little issues without seeing the big picture once in a while that there are people who don't have a seat at the table. How do they get a seat at the table? People have to care. People beyond the group have to care. I'm putting my foot down. Why is that controversial? I don't know. I'm convinced that 50% of people, maybe even more, just don't give a shit beyond their sphere. Beyond their scope. That's why in the first place, why do we even have that sort of segregation and marginalization in the first place? Why did it even happen in the first place? There's not enough people helping out. But if you could just raise awareness on your Instagram page, I think you've done your part. Here's why AI is going to take over, right? Humans are smart enough to realize how shitty we are. And we're like, all right, we messed the planet up. We messed a lot of relations up. We are constantly at war. Yeah, let's create the bots. The bots that'll try to reset all of this. They'll eventually turn on us. But AI is an obvious evolution. Like, we're smart enough to say we're awful. God, are we bad? We are bad. So the geeks and the hackers and the nerds go into the software programming and they start to create artificial intelligence. And at first it's cute, a little movie with Haley Joel Osment. I think in the late 90s, I fell asleep in the theater. It was so fucking boring. Wasn't that a movie, Artificial Intelligence? And wasn't Haley Joel Osment in it? And is that his name, the kid from The Sixth Sense, who showed up in the show Silicon Valley and he wasn't a good guy? You know, Haley? HJO, those initials don't flow well. But shitty movie that didn't capture anyone's attention. And now we talk about AI like, pff, this is the end. And should it be? I mean, I don't want to act like it's right around the corner. But I think the answer is yeah. Yeah, it should be. I mean, read one story right now out of Ukraine or Israel. Read one chapter of the U.S. history book that I'm assigning my A-push kids. What's A-push? Advanced Placement United States History. Read one chapter of it. You'll come away thinking, holy shit, I guess we failed there, and I guess we failed there. And this is, ultimately, if you're going to rank countries, we're a good one. I don't know. I mean, I like living here, so I'll say it's a good one. But my God, there's strife. Oh, folks, there's strife. I don't even know if we're in control of any of this. Are we controlling anything? Are we? Or is strife and struggle and suffer just the natural course? Because I can make the case right now. I finally learned about pollination. You got to follow me with this. And I had pollination explained to me and actually understood it for the first time in my life, which is sad because I bet someone has tried to teach me about pollination at other phases of my life. And I just nodded with that blank stare. Oh, okay, that's pollination. So that's pollen and pollination. I didn't get it. But when I finally understood it recently, I think my wife explained it to me. It hit me on such a deep level that I realized things are just happening naturally, almost on autopilot, the way this planet is functioning. There's things that are happening too perfect to even process it with our limited human brains. Things are happening too perfectly, like our distance from the sun and the moon for us to not fry every day or freeze every day. I don't know, but plant reproduction, are you kidding me? This is just happening. Flowering plants everywhere. Picture all plants, just all plants. How are they continuing? I know how we are continuing, okay? For a being, what's alive? A lot of things are alive, but humans, how are we continuing? We're having sex, okay? How are plants continuing? There's also a lot of sex happening. You don't even see it, though, do you? Animals, I'll teach you about pollination right now. And you take some notes. I don't want this to go over your head. I finally learned it, so let me convey it or relay it, one of those, to you. So bees, bats, beetles, brontosaurus, bears, I don't know. Let's go back to bees, bats, beetles, bee animals. They're bringing big bags. Oh, I like alliteration. So bees, beetles, bats, not bears, bringing big bags of pollen. Get back on track, you son of a bitch. Just say something into the mic that's not a joke. Get serious. Okay, I'm doing it. Bears. Nope, not bears. Beetles, yeah? Bats? Sure. And bees. Let's just focus on bees. Bees are bringing pollen from male parts of a plant. Okay? Male parts? Plants have male parts. And bees are bringing them to female parts of the plant. And then those plants are having so much sex. Unprotected sex, just straight plant porno each day, and the plant continues living. That's just always happening. Okay, and I know you could talk about the shortage of bees, beetles, what was the other one? Bats. And it's scary because we need plants to continue. We need all of that to continue. Why? Why do we need all this? I actually don't know if you want to take a step back. Why do we need all of this? I don't know. I feel like we do, though. I feel like we need planet Earth to continue. Yeah, that's the team I'm on. What team are you on? I'm on planet Earth to continue. Oh, that's a bold stance. Okay, great. So bees just naturally do that? No one taught a bee? There's no training. There's no guidebook for a bee. They just naturally take the pollen from the male area and they shake it and throw it onto the female area. And us humans during the summer at our barbecues, we're like, I hate bees. Shut the fuck up. You hate bees. Bees are everything. Plants just naturally grow that way. That's been happening. I'm 42 and I finally understand pollination. No YouTube video of how to be something. Okay. No how to. The bees are not watching the YouTube video. How do I do this? They're just doing it. So what about us? I think we are just this way. That's a tough acceptance though. When I say this way, you go, huh. We're wonderful. I'd like to start with that. We're wonderful. We do things like art, and we do things like laugh, and we do things like hug friends and raise kids and celebrate shit. I mean, we're wonderful, but also we destroy each other and we destroy our earth. And instead of just judging everything on each side, judging that's good and that's bad. Hey, that's awful, but that's very good. I don't know. I think this is just the way we are. I don't think bees, I think when bees pollinate, they're like, wasn't I good today? I brought that male shit over to the female stuff. Wasn't I good? And then when bees sting your two-year-old in their arm, they're not like, oh, aren't we the worst? Aren't us bees just awful? We sting kids at parks and at pools. We just sting them. Fuck, bees, they're not anything to judge. They just are. We humans, we're judgmental. We judge ourselves. We're very critical. I guess it's part of this because we're intelligent enough to analyze stuff. But really, we just are this. We just are. Are we? Are we just this? The type of humans that eventually will drop some atomic bombs? That eventually will marginalize and forget about farm workers and mistreat these Chicanos who had to start a movement of, hey, notice us. Can you guys stop buying grapes? Holy schmoly. All right, I'm going to end with this. I know who the most secure men are in America. I know who they are. I am certain of this. This is not like an opinion. This is just a fact. The most secure men in America are the men that marry actresses in Hollywood who do full-on fuck scenes. I'll say it again. The most secure men in the world, in the country, in LA are the ones that will marry an actress who does a passionate sex scene. Yep, that's right. My wife and I watched Poor Things. It took us four sittings. Maybe we're old and tired. I don't know why did it take us so long to finish Poor Things. We watch the Oscars. We do this every year. We watch the Oscars and then we go, I gotta see that. Who is that? Like, there's movies we hadn't even heard of. And we're like, we should probably see that. Oh, she won the actress? Best Actress Award? Emma Stone? Love Emma Stone. I mean, if you saw Superbad, you love Emma Stone, right? And she's been good in so many things. I can't even think of right now. Was she in La La Land? Was that her? I think so. But she's just been in so many good things. And I hear she won Best Actress. Oh, The Help. One of my wife's favorite movies of all time. She's in The Help. And I'm like, okay, it's time. I'll try it. That's what I say with movies that don't look good to me. Like Poor Things. I think I watched a minute of the trailer and I was like, no, but I'll give it a whirl. In the whirl I gave it the first 15 minutes, I paused it and I looked at my wife and go, I don't get it. And she explained it because that's how we watch movies in this house. I have a low movie IQ. She has a high movie IQ. I get to pause it. She explains everything to me. And then I go, okay, cool. That actually sounds cool. And then we keep watching it and then I get it. Hey, I like to be taught. I'm a teacher and I'm a learner. I'm both. And I didn't know that it was going to be such a sexual movie. Didn't know it. Way more sex scenes than I anticipated. I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers away, spoiler alert, but she spends about 25 minutes of the movie as a prostitute, and there are some straight up sex scenes where you're like, are they? Are they just having sex? Is this tastefully done? I mean, it's not a porno, but it's like a director sometimes puts the foot on the pedal. There are many different tasteful ways to do a sex scene in a movie, but this director was like, you know what, let's stretch it a little bit. Let's add a little 10 seconds there. Let's have a nipple slip there. Let's show the guy's bare ass there and his nuts. Good, let's get it all. And it's still a movie that's in theaters that people watch, and there's famous people in it like Mark Ruffalo and Willem Dafoe, and it's really good. That's my review. It's really good. You should see it. But her husband not only watched it, but attends the Oscars with her. He just sits next to her in a tuxedo and he watches her win an award. Now, her acting was great, but also this guy is so secure. I would give him an award. The most secure man at the Oscars. And I Googled him. His name's Dave McCary. Not only did I Google him, I love this guy. He was a writer on Saturday Night Live. He was like a writing partner with Kyle Mooney. Don't forget about Kyle Mooney. Kyle Mooney was great on SNL, but Dave McCary, he married Emma Stone. They have a kid together. And one thing he does in his life is watch his wife on the silver screen. He watches his wife at the movie theater, maybe at home. I don't know when he watched the movie. Have sex with about 20 different guys. Passionate, sweaty, wild sex. And then he just has dinner with her. He sits down at the dinner table. Maybe they have salad or maybe it's turkey burger night. Do you want cheddar or pepper jack, honey? And then he doesn't let those thoughts consume him. He just continues with his life and his relationship. I don't know. That's not me. That's not me. Now, I don't want to label myself the most insecure man, but I don't think I could marry a Hollywood actress who does the occasional sex scene at that level. Even if everything else clicked. Like, I love everything about her. This guy loves Emma Stone. So is that something that he just has to, you know, swallow? He's like, yeah, all right. You know what? My wife, I love Emma. She loves me. I just occasionally have to understand that she's going to do scenes like that. But here's the weirdest part. Is her acting based in the reality, like the real moment she has with McCary in the bedroom? Is he seeing that on screen? Is he like, wait, that's the face I see. Wait, that's the sound she makes when I think I'm doing my job well. Wait, that's a performance. Oh, this guy's so secure. Give him an Oscar. Actually, I'd like to see him and Kyle Mooney create a comedy that wins the award for Best Picture. Hasn't happened since Annie Hall. I think that's the only comedy that's ever won Best Picture at the Oscars. And I'll leave you with that fun fact. I'll leave you with a lot tonight. And I'll leave you with love. I love you, and that's a fact. If you're listening to this nonsense, or maybe sometimes there is a little bit of sense, but it's mixed in with that nonsense, then I appreciate you. Okay, folks, we're all walking to Memphis for episode 234. It's now in the books, and I will talk to you soon.